Picture a trillion-dollar experiment that failed spectacularly. Over six decades, Western nations pumped more than $1 trillion into Africa, roughly $1,000 for every person alive on the continent today. The result? Poverty rates didn't fall. They tripled from 11% to 66%. This isn't just inefficiency. It's a catastrophic reversal. What if the very thing meant to save Africa has been slowly killing it? This uncomfortable question drives one of the most provocative economic arguments of our time, that foreign aid, far from being Africa's lifeline, has become its greatest curse. The idea sounds almost heretical. After all, we've been conditioned to believe that giving is inherently good, that more resources must lead to better outcomes. But what happens when generosity becomes dependency, when help becomes harm? At Bretton Woods in 1944, 700 delegates created the World Bank and IMF to rebuild post-war Europe. By the 1960s, these institutions pivoted to newly independent African nations, delivering $950 million for infrastructure projects like the Kariba Dam. The 1970s oil shocks changed everything. When petroleum prices quadrupled in 1973, OPEC nations flooded banks with cash. Banks loaned this windfall to developing countries at absurdly low rates, sometimes negative. African nations borrowed heavily, receiving $36 billion in aid by the late 1970s. But when oil prices spiked again in 1979 and interest rates soared, the trap snapped shut. Africa's debt service costs quadrupled from $2 billion to $8 billion within 7 years. When Mexico defaulted in 1982, African countries followed. The IMF imposed structural adjustment programs, budget cuts, privatization, economic shock therapy. Meanwhile, commodity prices collapsed. Oil lost 60%, sugar 89%. By the late 1980s, debt servicing exceeded incoming aid. Africa was sending $15 billion more out than it received. The patient was being drained to pay for medicine that wasn't working. Africa possesses vast natural wealth, diamonds, oil, copper, gold, yet remains desperately poor. Asia, with far fewer resources, experienced explosive growth. Resource wealth often becomes an economic curse because extracting and selling commodities doesn't develop the complex institutions, educated workforce, or entrepreneurial culture that drive sustainable growth. Like lottery winners who end up broke, resource-rich African nations funded governments through extraction rather than taxation, severing the crucial link between citizens and leaders. When revenue flows from oil wells or diamond mines, leaders become accountable to foreign buyers, not their own people. Paul Collier found that countries with ocean access but few natural resources historically outperformed their resource-rich neighbors. Botswana stands as the exception, growing at 6.8% annually between 1968 and 2001 by implementing market-oriented policies and reducing aid dependency to just 1.6% of national income. Success came from weaning off aid, not from receiving more of it. Aid advocates deploy six arguments that collapse under scrutiny. First, they invoke the Marshall Plan, America's $13 billion reconstruction of post-war Europe. But Marshall Plan payments never exceeded 2.5% of recipients' GDP and ended after 5 years. African countries receive aid equivalent to 15% of GDP for over half a century. More crucially, Europe had functioning institutions needing revival, while uncontrolled billions in Africa undermined institution building from scratch. Second, advocates cite IDA graduates, 22 countries that transitioned away from aid. Yet only three African nations made this list: Botswana, Equatorial Guinea, and Swaziland. They succeeded by reducing aid dependency, not maximizing it. Third is the claim that conditional aid works. Yet over 85% of conditional aid funds were misappropriated, according to World Bank studies. The fourth myth suggests aid works in well-governed countries, puzzling since well-functioning countries need aid least. The fifth points to the micro-macro paradox. Individual projects show positive results while overall situations deteriorate. Finally, advocates call for a big push, massively increasing funding. Yet the 2000 Millennium Goals to halve poverty by 2015 failed despite additional billions. More aid doesn't solve the problem. It is the problem. Aid actively destroys African economies through five interconnected mechanisms. First, it fuels massive corruption. Mobutu of Zaire and Abacha of Nigeria each embezzled around $5 billion. When governments receive external funding rather than taxes, they answer to foreign donors, not citizens. Of $525 billion in World Bank loans since 1946, at least 25% was misused. In 1990s Uganda, only 20 cents per education dollar reached schools. Second, aid undermines civil society by preventing a strong middle class from emerging. Economic success depends on political loyalty rather than entrepreneurship, severing the link between taxation and representation. Third, aid fuels civil wars. Africa experienced 17 major conflicts during the 1990s while receiving the most aid per capita globally. Seizing power means controlling unlimited aid payments. An estimated 40 million Africans have died in civil wars over five decades. Fourth, massive inflows create macroeconomic chaos through reduced savings, inflation, and Dutch disease, currency appreciation that kills export competitiveness. Uganda's attempt to sterilize excess aid cost $110 million annually. Fifth, aid destroys social capital, the networks of trust and reciprocity essential for development, making sustainable growth impossible. Imagine if every African country learned the aid tap would shut off in 5 years. Panic would ensue, but millions wouldn't die, since hardly any aid reaches those in need anyway. Wars might actually decrease as a major cause of conflict would vanish. The path forward requires three stages. Reduce aid dependency by 14% annually until it drops from 75% to 5%, filling the gap through trade, foreign investment, capital markets, remittances, and savings. Second, cut expenditures by fighting corruption and eliminating waste. Third, strengthen institutions with genuine accountability. Four alternatives can replace aid. Sovereign bonds provide market-based financing with built-in discipline. Ghana and Gabon successfully issued international bonds in 2007. Foreign direct investment brings capital, jobs, technology, and expertise. China invested $100 billion in Africa between 2000 and 2007, dwarfing Western aid. Trade expansion offers transformative potential, with Chinese Premier Wen Jiabao promising to increase trade with Africa to $100 billion annually. The main obstacle? Western protectionism. OECD countries subsidize agriculture by $300 billion annually, three times their total development aid. Microfinance provides capital to the excluded. Muhammad Yunus's Grameen Bank pioneered solidarity lending, achieving over 1.3 million members with $450 million in microloans by 2008, with default rates of only 2%. Market-oriented solutions deliver results. China lifted 800 million from poverty since 1978. Brazil's Bolsa Família reaches 46 million people by conditioning payments on school attendance and health checkups, bypassing corruption while improving outcomes. Change is emerging. African startups raised over $4 billion in 2021. The continent's growing middle class, digital infrastructure, and young entrepreneurs attract global investors. Private equity and venture capital are replacing aid as primary capital sources. Continued Western aid serves neither humanitarian nor strategic interests. Impoverished, unstable states become terrorism breeding grounds. China's pragmatic, investment-focused engagement should prompt Western nations to reassess their approach. Breaking aid dependence isn't just economically necessary, it's morally imperative. Africa possesses vast resources, a young population, and boundless entrepreneurial spirit. What it needs isn't charity, but opportunity, expanded trade, increased investment, and economic freedom. Botswana proved what's possible through market-oriented policies and good governance. 6 decades of good intentions produced catastrophic results. Genuine compassion sometimes means withdrawing the help that hurts. Africa doesn't need saving. It needs freedom to save itself.